Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So you could just see
600,000 deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22 million.
Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor." Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they sat me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes. I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last ride. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And Master Ronnie saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package gonna go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week. 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarion. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarion took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarion, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
That's what you're saying.
No, that's not true. I have no idea.
We really need our own systems. And what's unfortunate, like when you look back historically, when great men have taken a stand to make us all strong and all come together, they were gunned down. They were assassinated because it's just so much power within the Black community that they just want to suppress it because we came over as, they say, slaves, but we were doctors. We made universities. We had the first paper. You know, we had so many things, and they just want to dumb it down. So I just don't know why we just can't come together. When we did come from the mud and being beat together on a boat together, why can't we just go together?
That's not true. But before anybody ever gunned you down or before anybody killed any ancestor, the people that looked like you and the people that were supposed to be in your corner hated you and killed your reputation first. The only way that they're able to infiltrate and to be able to kill you and gun you down is by first killing your reputation. Even if they kill you and you become a martyr, and in a lot of instances, you become a lot greater and have a much bigger impact than if they were to leave you alive and to let you fumble, right? The first thing that they ever did, and even if you go back to any of the people that a lot of people don't even agree with today, right? They're still killing Martin Luther King's legacy right now, right? Mm-hmm. Right now.
And we letting them.
And you know the interesting you know the interesting thing is about that? If you go back and you study history, most Black people didn't even like Martin Luther King. Most Black people hated Martin Luther King. Most Black people hate the very thing that is best for them in every single instance, in every single part of society, and in every single era. The very one, the one that is the biggest advocate for you, is the one that you hate first.
Yep.
They don't even have to do anything to you. It ain't them that's killing you. It's you that's killing you. We kill us first before anybody can ever do, say, or touch anything about us.
What's that? Aaron, damaged neural perception?
I got an understanding of why, from my understanding, from who I talk to and what I've researched on why a lot of Black people don't like MLK. It's what I was able to understand is a lot of Black people didn't want to be integrated. They wanted to be, they felt like they were doing better segregated.
That's not true.
I didn't say it was true or not. I said that's the understanding I got
integration,
from it.
Integration and reality. Listen, anybody can look back in hindsight and say, oh, this was bad. Fuck no. The reality is that overwhelming majority of black people, and if you study history, overwhelming majority of black people, integration was a choice. Integration was the option to be able to do what you wanted to do. It was to prevent you from not having to only go to this one thing to give you the option to be able to do what you. It was freedom.
Yeah.
That's not all really. Integration was the freedom to choose. What you see black people saying today, the people that argue against it, what they saying today is basically saying, listen, I wanted you to tell me what it is that I could do so you can guarantee my success. Bitch, you got more freedom today to do anything you want to do, and you still don't even go to a library. Every single library, the ones that you didn't have access to, they open and they empty. Empty. You have the option to be able to do anything you want to do right now. You can literally go to school for free. For free. You go to college and you fuck off the tuition money, and then you blame the system and say it's systematic oppression. Integration did nothing except to give you the option to be able to do even more.
What state are you in where college is free?
College is free everywhere.
If you are below a certain level and you start off at community college, and you start off at community, that's because they give you the option to be able to take it. You don't have to take it. If you are below a certain threshold and you go to community college, you can literally go to school for the first 2 years and get your associate's degree free. And then you can really finesse the system, because the way that I did it, I went to community college for my first 2 years, basically, practically free, because the credit hours were so little. And then I went and got a job. And people say, well, Anton, why did you go and get a job at the University of Michigan when you graduated school? Well, because the University of Michigan not only double matched my 401k, well, actually it was a 403b, they had the best benefits for my family. I already had a business to where I didn't have to use the money from my salary in order to substantiate myself. So then I let the university pay for my education when I went over into a major university. They literally paid for me to go to school after I graduated from community college, because they was incentivized, and the university actually had a program that allowed me to do so. Now, when I get that level of game out and I give it to the Patreon members and I give it to the people that I coach, and I say, listen, you can literally go through all 4 years for free, come out with zero student loans in debt, go into a STEM field, make all of the money, be able to keep all of it in, then continue to substantiate yourself by building up your 401k, by going to a public university or going into a government, right?
Because what if I just want to go into business?
But people don't want to hear that.
What if I just want to go into business?
Listen, you have the option to do what you want to do. I don't want to hear any excuses from anybody as to why they can't do the thing that they're supposed to do.
So are you saying that there was economic integration? Was there economic integration?
Yes, there is.
So
Bruiser, here's the
thing.
So everything Anton just said, he was saying in a integration.
He was talking about the Department of Education.
Hold on. Not only can you do exactly what Anton said, go to those same places, the library, your city hall, and ask what programs that are there specifically for black people, and they will throw a whole book on the damn table.
I'm not denying that.
And they still don't do that.
My question is it safe to say that integration only went to certain parts of the way of life or survival? As far as there was no housing integration. There was school integration. But there was no economic integration.
What is housing integration?
Think about this for a second, Bruce.
Go try to sell your house with the pictures of your face on the wall.
I literally gave you word for word.
See your appraisal value. Go ahead, Anton. My bad. I was answering.
I literally just gave you word for word the blueprint of how you can get a free education and get a STEM field degree.
I don't disagree with that. I was talking about people who want to just go into business.
Here's the beautiful thing about it. Even if you go into business, that is your decision. Be willing to fail or succeed based off of your own merit. Nobody owes you anything.
Bruce, what are you talking about, bro?
If you want to go into business as a black person, do you know that there are grants specifically for you to do that?
They have it for like people who don't have as much money or abandoned. They have programs for people to just do trade.
Exactly.
That's how it started, really. Like,
I'm just asking questions. I'm not trying to argue. All I'm asking is someone convince me that a black person can graduate high school and go get a $20,000 business loan before he get a $20,000 school loan.
But you don't need a business loan, and I would also say that that is a bad idea because all you still don't know how to run a business. Just because you're getting a loan don't mean you're going to be successful.
Right.
You don't need a loan. We are being taught wrong. We are being taught wrong. We are you're supposed to reverse engineer what success looks like. This is not it. I literally just gave people the blueprint. Listen, if you don't make no money and you poor, right, you have a better chance at being successful when it comes to college as far as funding your college and a better chance of coming out without any student loans than somebody who's solidly middle class and parents don't qualify in order for you to be able to get a Pell Grant.
Adam Clayton Powell, for the first time, was defeated. Charles Rangel won in a very close election. Within a few years, Adam Clayton Powell would contract cancer and die.
If we must die, let us not die like hogs penned in some inglorious spot. What use is an extra year or two to the man who kills the time that God has given him?
Much of the story of Adam Clayton Powell is on display here in this anteroom of the Abyssinia Baptist Church. But there are many parts of the Adam Powell story that you cannot see hanging up on the walls, mainly the ironies in his life. Isn't it ironic that Adam Powell was such a loud voice that few people would listen to? Perhaps if his loud voice had been heeded on the question of police corruption, there may not have been a Knapp Commission. If his loud voice about government corruption had been heeded, there may not have been a Watergate. If his loud voice against hypocrisy on Capitol Hill had been heeded, perhaps Wayne Hayes and Tom Dodd and Earl Butz and Carl Albert and countless others might have not have been caught in such embarrassing situations. Adam Clayton Powell represents still another chapter in a long story of black militant fighters against oppression and injustice here in America. He wasn't perfect. He had his faults, but don't we all? The point is, he was a fighter. If he did play, he worked harder than he played. Most of all, he was a fighter.
As I know here, you're in trouble, where it says about 30% are unemployed. That's why I'm working hard to get this surplus food here. Some of you say to me, well, I'm not like you. I'm not a congressman. I haven't got education. I haven't got work. But you're a human being. And you know what you've got? You've got in your hand the power to use your vote and to use even those few cents you get from welfare to spend them only where you want to spend them. A young slave boy stood one day before the greatest ruler of his day. And God said to Moses, what's in your hand? And Moses said, Lord, only I've got a stick, that's all. He said, well, let me use what's in your hand. And God used that slave boy with a stick in his hand to divide the Red Seas, march through a wilderness, bring water out of rocks, manna from heaven, and bring his people to freedom land. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? George Washington Carver, who was so frail that he was traded for a broken-down horse as a slave boy. And George Washington Carver, sitting in the science laboratory at Tuskegee, told me, he said, Dr. Powell, he said, I just go out on the field each morning at 5 o'clock, and I let God guide me. And I bring back these little things and work them over my laboratory, and that man did more to revolutionize the agricultural science of peanuts and of cotton and sweet potato than any other human being in the field of agricultural science. What's in your hand? Just let God use you, that's all. What's in your hand? I've got a string in my hand, that's all, and I'm flying a kite. And way up in the heavens, lightning strikes it. And I, Benjamin Franklin, discover for the first time the possibilities of electricity with a string in my hand. What's in your hand, little hunchback sitting in a Roman jail? I haven't got anything in my hand but an old quill pen, but God says, write what I tell you to write. Paul Roof, I have run my race with patience. I've finished my course. I've kept the faith. Henceforth, as laid up in you. What's in your hand, little boy? All I've got is a slingshot. And the enemies of my people are great and big and more numerous than we are. Well, little David, go down to the brook and pick out a few stones and come on back and close your eyes if you want to and pull back that slingshot and let it go. And David killed the biggest enemy, the leader of the giants, against his people, and his people became free, just letting God guide a stone in his hand. And a few years passed, and David is a king. And God says, what's in your hand? He said, I've got a harp in my hand. He said, well, David, play on your harp. And he played, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Maketh me to lie down in green pastures. Leadeth me beside still waters. Yea, though I walk through the valley in the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? Man hanging on a cross? I've got two nails in my hand. Father, I stretch my hand to thee. No other help I know. If thou withdraw thyself from me, whither shall I go? And that man, with two nails in his hand, split history in half, B.C. and A.D. And what's in your hand tonight, people of Cambridge? You've got God in your hand, and he'll let you win, because he's on your side and one with God, always in the majority. So walk with him, and talk with him, and work with him, and stick together, and fight together. And with God's hand in your hand, the victory will be accomplished here sooner than you dreamed, sooner than you hoped, sooner than you prayed for, sooner than you imagined. Good night, and God bless you.
Okay, I'll jump off topic today. Is Amish insurance, in light of these storms that have come through Florida in the last 3 weeks or so, three weeks, two hurricanes. We're going to briefly talk about Amish insurance, or insurance. What is that? That's basically a concept name I came up with, but in principle, it's real. So we'll be back in 2 minutes with that.
Bye.
Okay, just to jump off title today. Now, it's Tuesday. What day is this? The 15th? Yeah. And where I'm at in Florida, because yesterday was a holiday, Columbus Day. Today, regular day. But the schools in the county where I'm at are still out. I guess they resume back in the normal schedule tomorrow, but it's still a cleanup day around various parts of not only the county, but in various parts of the state of Florida. So, like I said, we've had two storms, major ones, with Category 3 and above. Well, actually, we can go through the whole spectrum, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. No, not 5, 1, 2, 3, up to 4 within the last 2 weeks here in Florida. So school is out today, and they're going to resume back tomorrow. And I don't know how they make up school days down here because they have, you know, kids have extracurricular activity like it's football season. So, you know, that's a week or possibly 2 weeks of games that they had to make up. So along with other things that the extracurricular activities that kids have today in school. Because you can't play a football game with a Zoom call. Everything is not online. Matter of fact, actually, the whole purpose of online, I think, is to really increase your quality of life offline. That's the way I look at it. But in any event, Amish insurance, that we're going to talk about today. Now, with the storms that have happened in Florida, parts of Georgia, North Carolina, parts of South Carolina, parts of North Carolina, and wherever else. You know, you've had some homes decimated, I mean, totally wiped out, or the roof totally, I mean, ripped off the top of a house, and everything in between, floods and all that. And then, you know, some people might have had insurance. They don't know what they're going to do. Because they don't have the money to start over. And then you have some people who had insurance, but they don't have the deductible. Imagine this real scenario. You paid on your homeowner insurance faithfully for the last 10, 15, maybe 20 years. And then a storm comes along, and you need to put in a claim. And, of course, with insurance, you have to pay a deductible. But now this is figure I'm about to give out is real, because I've heard it several times within the last 3 weeks. But the deductible, before they could repair the roof or replace the roof or any kind of damage that you might have, the deductible is $5,000. So you have people out here that who paid that homeowner's insurance faithfully, month after month, on time for years, but they just don't have the deductible. The deductible might be $2,000, it might be $5,000, it might be more than $5,000. But if you don't pay that deductible, then insurance company is not going to pay. So you got people like that, then you know FEMA's coming through, and then what FEMA might offer might not be enough to get you back to where you were. However, in the Amish and in the Mennonite community, they play by a different set of rules, and I absolutely love their rules. And it's what I call, now they don't call it this, but I call it Amish insurance, because they train up their children. They're in sync with the community that when the kids are ready to start their own lives and get married or what have you, the family and some of the neighbors are going to get together, maybe other relatives or friends, somebody within that community, we're going to get together and build the new Mrs. and Mrs. whoever a house, and it's going to be a debt-free house, not federally insured. Doesn't have to be, because the community is the insurance. The community is your family, your relatives. The community is your insurance. Like I said, I don't know what they call it, but what I'm calling it is Amish insurance. All right. So, and in Amish communities, they have natural disasters that happen, you know, just that pass through, you know. Twisters and where, you know, they have Amish community right here in South Florida, Southwest Florida. They have Amish community, but you don't hear about none of them. If they get wiped out with the Amish insurance, they bounce back on their feet quickly. So that, now you don't have to be Amish, you don't have to be Mennonite, and the other group is Hutterite. You don't have to be any of those. This is something that you can do on, well, not on your own, but form a community, all right? And because if you know that the Amish and the men, they don't have to recruit anybody. They don't recruit anybody. They don't proselytize. They, you know, and I'm not saying there's anything bad with any of those things. I'm just saying that that's the way they roll with it. I would love to get more complicated with it, but it's really that simple. Okay. It's really that simple. When you're there from the cradle to the grave, that's their lifestyle. From barn raising to building a shed to opening up a business to having their own farmer's market, the community gets together. Somebody might be down on their luck. They don't have to worry about three squares a day. You know, somebody is sick. And what they practice, what they do in the Amish, the Mennonite, and the Hutterite community is what I call real social security. Real social security. They don't have to go to the Social Security office, which is a de facto government agency. I'm not knocking that, because local social services does help a lot of people. But in their community, that's what they do. That's why I call it real Social Security. They don't have to go, you know, to, you know, outside that. All right, so we're going to go to the phone lines here right after we play this. And if you have any comments on Amish insurance, but that really is that simple. It's not a term that you're going to find out online. Maybe, you know, but I made it up a few days ago and said, you know, remember Friday? I said, Saturday, you know, I said, you know what? Amish insurance. It just popped in my head. But that's all it is. Neighbors helping neighbors, you know, in a time of need.
How many of you want to live in a tiny house off-grid? Capture your own rainwater in a huge rain catchment system. Run all of your electricity needs completely off solar. Finance your land for 10 years and get it paid off quicker if possible. Yes, there's still going to be land taxes. Welcome to America. But your cost of living is almost going to be nothing compared to what you're paying now. I still ain't bought into the electric car thing yet. So some of the big questions are, how did you do it? How do you live off-grid?
Thank you.
Okay, so what did I do? How did I do it? In 2013, I got online and I started looking for land for sale. What I was really looking for was off-grid land or just hunting land. It didn't take long and I found some desert land in West Texas that was really cheap. After doing a little investigation on the rainfall only being about 12 inches a year, I decided against that and I figured out that's pretty much why the property was so cheap. So I literally Googled up, where's the best place to live off-grid in the United States? Not only did I find what I was looking for, I was told the counties that were the best in the United States to go off-grid in. Okay, Google, good off-grid property in this certain county. And guess what I found? We finance land ourselves, in-house finance. No credit, bad credit, nothing needed, just your down payment. So being a man with bad credit at the time, what do you think I did? So I got on their website and I looked up the counties I was talking about. Found several properties in those counties. And you know, a lot of this stuff is old logging land that had already been logged. I mean, it didn't bother me. It was beautiful. The owners of the company and the property were so nice that they said, if you want to and you have an RV or a tent or something like that, you can actually go out there and pitch your tent or pull your RV out there and stay a few days and see how you like it. See if you want to buy it. Well, I know this part right here doesn't sound good if you got good credit, but it sounds great if you were in a situation like I was in. 10% annual interest. If you do the math on that and you understand what that is, it's kind of tough, but I did it. 10 years has gone by. I've done a whole lot of improvements, and I paid it off. Not only did I pay it off, I put that tiny house on it, and I did a bunch of... Whoops, that's a little done. So I did a bunch of other things that was good for a hunting property. And I thought, man, if things ever went bad in the United States and we went to war or we had civil unrest or anything like that, my property would be the perfect place to be. I'm glad I got this thing. So that was my kind of train of thought. Needless to say, I eventually paid it off. I got the deed. And I know you're like, well, how can I do this? Okay, well, first off, you have to pick what state you want to be in and what state you want to do this in. Second off, I would do my research on what states have the least regulations of living off-grid, which states will actually let you capture rainwater, which states will actually let you use solar panels, which states will actually let you dig your own well if you desire to. Did I mention which state has the lowest property taxes? Look, man, I'm not saying I did it perfect. I'm not even saying I did it the way you would do it. What I'm saying is, this is how I did it, and this is a way that you can try for yourself. When I made the short video about it, it was blowing up, and it still is blowing up. And that's the reason why I'm making this video here, because I want to answer some of y'all's questions that you have. I mean, I don't want this all to my own. If this can help somebody out, I mean, I want other people to do the same thing. I want other people to live their life, have a good life. You work 30, 35 years to pay off a house, a mortgage nowadays. And then you pay $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a year in taxes for that house after it's paid. Seems like a lot of times it's people's dream to just have a small cabin out on a bunch of acreage. Or just to have a small cabin out on 5 acres. People would be happy with that. That's what I keep hearing anyways. Now let's get into some of the details of how I did it. Okay, true story. A lot of you didn't believe, but this house cost me right at $8,400. I went and I paid cash for it. I bought a travel trailer for $3,000. I fixed it up and I turned it for $8,500. So I went straight down and bought this house. This house was a shell. It has no interior. It's just a shell, if you know what that is. Now I'm going to show you where you get these type of houses. Do you ever look on the side of the road and you see those shed to house type things? Or even you see buildings like Graceland or, you know, places where you see them building a shed, and usually it's in the county, and they've got them lined up on some property, and you're driving down the highway, and you see a few of them lined up out there for sale. Well, that's what we kind of got going on here. I'm not saying that you can get this house for $8,400 anymore. That was 2 years ago. But you might be able to get one similar like it for about $10,000 or $12,000. You don't have to have credit to get one of these, and you don't have to have the cash to get one. They let you make payments on them. You just put a down payment, and they'll deliver it. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not even saying that you have to live off-grid. But you can buy property like this, and you can have it as a hunting property, and you can just keep it for hunting. And I guess if things went bad and, you know, that SHTF thing happens, I guess you could go out there and take your family out there and maybe prepare in that kind of sense, you know. So what is the status of my batteries now at about 3 p.m.? Let's check it out and see. I don't know if you can see it or if there's too much of a glare, but it says 329 watts are coming in, and the batteries are in float, sitting at 6.1 amps. 54 volts is where it's at. It's basically telling us that the house is being ran completely off of the solar panels right now, and we're only pulling 328 watts, and the batteries are just totally topped off. They're sitting here totally floating. Nothing's being pulled from the batteries. Everything that's being pulled in the house, like the refrigerator and the fan and the other things, electric water pump and all that, whenever it turns on, all those things are being ran right now by the solar panels themselves. A few people have been asking, will it run the air conditioner? Yes, it'll run the air conditioner, especially during the daytime. It has no problem at all running the air conditioner. The air conditioner pulls about 550 watts, and we're bringing in 3,200 watts when we need it. So, yeah. It has no problem running the refrigerator, the air conditioner, the fan, and several other things. Whatever you want to run, it'll run. I run my power tools when I'm out working. I run my shop and my shop lights and any tools that I have in the shop. So, yeah, I'm not going to lie. It's a peaceful place to be, and it's a nice place to call home. It's a nice place to kick back and relax. It's a beautiful day out here today. The wife's not here today. I kind of wish she was. She would enjoy this weather. A lot of people keep asking about that garden. Yes, I want to do a garden someday. Yes, but I don't have a garden yet. I don't have animals yet and all that. And yes, someday I want to have animals, especially chickens and things like that where we can have our own eggs. But I'm just not to that point yet.
Okay, let's check out some details on my rainwater catchment system. So this is the 6,000-gallon water tank that I harvest the rainwater in. I got this tank on a trade for a golf cart for $200. I towed it about 250 miles on a 16-foot trailer. These are the gutters and the gutter guards, which you can see are clearly doing their job this year. And this is where it comes together and runs into the tank. On the back side of the water tank here is the water pump house. This has my pump, filter, and water pressure tank inside it. The small black tank that you see is a 500-gallon overflow tank. This water tank full would weigh about 40,000 pounds. I shock it twice a year with about 4 gallons of bleach each time, depending on how much rain has been flowing through it. I installed the wood stove in this chimney pipe. I got the wood stove used for about $200. The chimney parts were really expensive. They cost me about $600, and I mean, this is me doing all this myself.
I appreciate all y'all watching. If you do leave a comment, I answer almost every one of them back. The rude and crude ones, I don't really answer back, but I like to answer back to everybody and talk to everybody and stay interactive with everybody. So if you want to leave a comment, more than likely I'm going to respond to you. Okay, guys, until next time, we'll see you later.
E-commerce develops rapidly in China. It demonstrates that the transition from physical to digital commerce, often perceived as a phenomenon of high-income countries, can happen in a country at a lower level of development as well. The World Bank and the Alibaba Group launched a joint research initiative to examine how China has harnessed digital technologies to aid growth and expand employment opportunities through e-commerce development in rural areas. Taobao villages are villages significantly engaged in e-commerce, with total annual e-commerce transaction volume of at least RMB 10 million, with at least 100 active online shops. The number of Taobao villages increased from 20 in 2013 to 1,311 in 2016 and to 2,118 in 2017. The World Bank Alibaba Joint Research Team, in collaboration with Peking University, conducted a survey in rural China covering 1,400 households and 80 Taobao villages significantly engaged in e-commerce. the analysis finds that rural areas with good infrastructure and good access to markets tend to be most conducive to e-commerce. More than half of people in Taobao villages use internet. People with higher education are more likely to use internet, particularly for work and learning-related activities. The internet penetrates people's lives with news, entertainment, online shopping, work, and education. Most people, especially e-households in Taobao villages, perceive their social status as equal or higher compared with 5 years ago, and they believe they have equal or even higher social status 2 years in the future. E-households are richer than other households. Business income, including e-commerce income, is the main income source of e-households. E-shop owners are younger and more educated than the rest of the population in the village. Many e-shop owners are returned migrants and women. Most e-shops are small. E-shop workers in Taobao villages have wage levels equal to or higher than workers in urban private industries. High cost of online advertisement, tough competition, and lack of skills are considered by e-shop owners the top three obstacles to developing e-commerce. Access to finance remained an important constraint. The majority of e-households have never borrowed for operations or only borrowed from household members, friends, and relatives. For those who borrowed, Ant Financial, followed by banks and other financing platforms, are important sources of financing. Many anecdotal cases show that e-commerce play a positive role in people's lives. The future research agenda includes how can e-commerce development be furthered as an instrument for poverty reduction and shared prosperity? How can the lessons of rural China be used to inspire other countries to seek unconventional solutions and a wider set of partners to tackle persistent challenges?
Okay. All right, well, you heard me on Amish Insurance. Is neighbors, family, community getting together. So when somebody needs a house built, the building built, they, you know, or if flooding comes through, just like with, when you think about it, insurance, that is offered through, you know, your major companies, insurance companies. That's really for people who don't have social network that they can rely on. That's really what it is. So whatever you're spending on, matter of fact, let's, before I go to the phone lines here, let's say, let's say your insurance, let me look this up online. Let's see what AI says. Average household, average homeowners, owners, insurance payment per month. All right, let's see what that is. Okay, I'm doing it with AI. All right, the average homeowner's insurance payment per month in the United States is around $146 a month, which is $1,754 annually. And of course, it all depends on the size of your house and all that. But like in New Jersey, they say like in Vermont and New Jersey, premium might be as low as $865 or $886 per year. Oh, wait a minute. And then, all right. So 146. You know what? If you put together, you can do this one in two ways. You would come off better, and we're going to start doing this. Instead of paying the insurance company, matter of fact, we're going to start doing this. Instead of paying the insurance company, take that, you can do it a couple ways here. You can take $100 and have like little social events where you're breaking bread. Now, you can come out of your pocket and do this, or what you can do is get together with some friends and relatives, and once a month, have a potluck. Somebody brings over, I don't know, potato salad, coleslaw, whatever you guys like to eat. One person brings over, contributes something to the meal. You know, sodas for you alcohol drinkers, whatever kind of alcohol you like to drink. But once a month, bare minimum once a month. Now, if you can pull this off once a week, it'll be better for you. Once a week or every other week, if you can pull it off once a week, bare minimum once a week, ideally once a week, a potluck, and whoever drops through, drops through. And then you can rotate, you know, we'll do it at this person's house today, we'll do it at this person's farm next week, you know, whatever you got to make. Or you can switch it up, potlucks, combination, de facto. I know a person that used to have a happy hour at their home, a happy hour at a home, private home, inviting. You just couldn't come in off the street, and it'd probably be no more than 10 people. But have a potluck, have a happy hour, you know, every week, every other week, maybe once a month. If all else fails, once a month. Okay. And because then you wouldn't need $100 out of your pocket. And what you're doing is you just don't have to sit and eat. You can also make it educational. There's food there and refreshments. You can also give a lecture. You can do a demonstration. Or you can have a how-to class. You know, how to hang sheetrock. You know, so they can nibble on something before the class, nibble during the class for those who are not working, but they can see what you're doing. And, of course, nibble after, you know, after you did your demonstration. You know, how to frame up a wall. How to frame up a floor. You know, how to paint a room. How to hang a door, how to make a door. Take one simple thing, some type of thing that you can do every week or once a month. It all depends on you. But rotate around. That's something we shall be doing. Now, how to buy an acre of land. I'm going to have to listen to this podcast over again. I'm putting out stuff. I all right, hold it. That was a good idea. We need to act on that, like, immediately. But having these little got to break bread now. If all your budget says your budget is for potato chips, then you provide the chips, then let everybody know. That's the other thing, and you need to have maybe one or two or three people coordinate that so, you know, you don't have 10 bags of chips there, or nothing to drink or nothing else to eat. You know, somebody might bake a cake, you know, but a potluck. And you're building that social, and that's all the Amish do. Because, see, when you break bread, that's a bonding experience. And then when you build something together, y'all might get together and build a doghouse or a community guest house. So when people come to visit in that particular community, their guests have a place to stay. Or somebody's down on their luck, they build a community house where, all right, here's a community house. Here's where you can get yourself together. And you know, have rules for it and all that. But those are all examples of Amish, or what I call Amish insurance. Anyway, let's go to the phone lines real quick here. 309, your mic is open.
Good morning. I was just posting something on your Facebook page.
Okay.
It's about Lakeland Hurricane Insurance Villages, Lakeland. Tuesday, October 15th, RP Funding Center, Sykes Hall, 701 West Lime Street, Lakeland 5. Villages will stay open daily and operate even days. I'm trying to read it all. Even 7 days a week, okay, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. So anybody that might need that in your area, wanted to share that.
Okay. I'm going to it now. And that's more than likely something organized by the city of Lakeland.
Yep. Well, I know, you know, I'm right here's a. I'm gonna put this on the Facebook too. There's a flood warning today in Tampa Bay. Did that as well. And it goes to 9:54 a.m. Eastern Time by Tampa Bay News. This was just given. So says the flood warning is extended through the following rivers: Hillsborough River, Hillsborough River State Park, affecting Hillsborough County, Little Manatee River at Wemuma at US 301, affecting Hillsborough County, and Ancalote River at Elfers at Little Road, affect Pasco County. Flood warnings continue through following rivers in Florida: the Alfalfa River, Horse Creek River, the Withlacoochee River, and Hillsborough River, Cypress Creek, Marika River, Makia River, or something like that. Peace River, the Peace River in Arcadia, and Springs. But yeah, there's looks like you got some water coming your way there in Florida to be looking out for today. It says flood stage is at 8 feet. Now it says the river is expected to remain steady above stage at eight feet nine. So it is 9 inches over flood stage right now. And it says the flood history, the crest compares to the previous crest in 1959 at 9.1 feet. It's going on till 4:30.
I'm looking at the what you posted now. Let's see what Hurricane Insurance Villages. I'm gonna see if I can get a picture of this. Okay, insurance. Let's see, Insurance Village. Oh, Villages, really. The Villages Insurance, so that, oh, that's something completely different. Let's see, Lakeland. That might be a whole new type of community. Okay, CFO. All right, that's blurry. I can't read that. Is there anything that government insurance village location, funding center? But do they have an actual village that they've built around that name? That's what I'm trying to find out. This looks like it might be an office. Insurance Villages opening in the Bay Area. All right, let me see what they have here. Insurance Villages opening in Bay Area after Milton. Here's where and when. Insurance Village opening Monday in aftermath of Hurricane Milton. This is in Bradenton. Insurance companies are coming together at a so-called Insurance Villages to help impacted Hurricane Milton, those impacted by Hurricane Milton, with the process of filing claims. The setup is similar to an insurance village that opened in Clearwater after Hurricane Helene. That's all this month, within the last 3 days, at which more than 30 property, flood, and auto insurance companies were represented during the first day. Four sites are opening in Tampa Bay this week, with the first opening at Bradenton on Monday. All right, this will be the Bradenton City Hall, the auditorium building, Clearwater. They give the addresses. Plant City. What to bring? ID, insurance cards, photo and documentation of damage, and repair estimates that you may have received. All right. So it looks like these insurance villages are essentially centralized location where you can come and, like they say, bring your ID and, you know, your credentials or what have you, any repairs, I mean, estimates, insurance cards, photo damage, you know, photos of the damage. This is where you can go process your claim.
Yes. And not only, I don't think it's just process your claim. I think it might be a
live in temporary
shelter. It might be something where people aren't being covered on insurance.
Right.
Also.
Well, it could be.
It's something. I'm not sure exactly what it is. It's being shared in one of my groups. So I like sharing out things that might help people.
Let's see. You got all these commercials, right? Let's see what they're going to say on. All right, they're designed to help people apply for aid.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It was applying for help that you're not getting. So I'm sure
right.
That's what that – I'm sure what that is.
Yeah. All right. This is the insurance village. I'm looking at, they're in a bunch of people in a gym, and they have different insurance companies, and they're talking to representatives from the insurance companies. Some have multiple carriers, that's the homeowners.
Gotcha.
So this is not a place where a person who's been wiped out and is homeless, this is a place where you can basically get direction, you know. This looks like it's for policy holders. Well, I agree with him. It's a first step. Okay, bring photos of damage, documentation of damage. And like I say, this news report is coming from Bradenton City Hall, and with what it's a gym. They're on a basketball court. Now let's see, Lakeland, I read on Lime Street, Plant City. All right, well, okay, well. Now, my vision of an insurance village is something different, but anyway, but it's for what they're doing, it's good. It's good, so. Well, the month isn't over yet, because I'm watching with the National Hurricane Season, Center. So they got something out there in the Atlantic, but it's way, way away. It might fizzle out if it hasn't done it already. So, anything? What else you got, Chris?
Oh, just we are deployed at the Suncoast Community Center. There in Fort Myers, okay. Florida. So if there's anybody out in that area that might need something, you can definitely reach out. I think Fort Myers took about the run of this storm. And where they tried to send us there in Florida was kind of in the communities that are influential, if you say. And all my people packed up and went somewhere else. They went to the poor side of town. They went to where they're needed. So I'm happy and proud of my people. They didn't just go and help the people that are getting help. They went and got the people that aren't. And that's what they're doing. And they've had a world of a hurt of a time. So if anybody would like to give, please do. You can go to stormsar.org and you can donate there. And please do. They do need help. We met with a community up in North Carolina yesterday. We gave them a letter to get their, endorsement approval upon so we can actually come in and help. But one of the organizations that I'm with up there, 3 days before, 3 days after the storm, we had handed that mayor a $10,000 check before the government ever showed up. And that mayor, she stepped up. She really wants to continue to get help. But I know that,
these people out there that have been said they don't want help or can't get help to them, they want help. Don't think they don't. They're not saying, don't come help me, bring me water. They're not saying, don't do that. So it might not be too bad around you right now, but you know you guys just went through a hurricane. And my guys, my people are down there right now doing what they can do. But North Carolina got a lot worse. They got a lot worse. And there's a lot of places, you know, that ain't even getting talked about. Georgia's not really getting talked about. You know, it's more they're bringing attention to one spot, but they're also perverting your attention away. I want people to realize, please give. We need your help. And these people need your help. And, you know, my team ain't being paid to show up. They're showing up because they care. So, I at least got to say that. I got to speak up for them. And every time I get ready to go, it seems like I get diverted somewhere else. But I look like I'm going toward North Carolina. But my team is telling me they need me in Florida. So they kind of want me to come down there for 3 weeks or four and then go to North Carolina. But if this city, it's called Kingston, North Carolina, who we're working with right there. And, we need to be able to help these people. I guess I can share that.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good. Well, that's all we got for today then. I'm working on, working on a short little ebook as well as another project here, which we'll pick back up on tomorrow. And on that note, I got to charge my electronics up too. So on that note, thank you, Chris. Thank you all for listening. See you guys tomorrow.
Jiffy Lube, we car about cars. In fact, we're kind of obsessed. That's why we've been taking car off business with quick quality oil changes and service for over 40 years. And with things like our Carful Vehicle Review, where our experts check, fill, clean, and inspect your vehicle, you'll know we'll car for your car like we car for our own. Jiffy Lube. Car more.
Visit JiffyLubeDC.com to find a Jiffy Lube service center near you.